Good evening. You've tuned into the Gnostic Waves, the show that brings you all things of a mystical, philosophical, and psychological nature. And we also include a meditation practice at the end of the show. So thank you for your company this evening. Hello to all our regular listeners and irregular listeners. Glad that you could join us this evening. So in case you were unaware, there is a website for this show where past show recordings are kept, and that website is gnosticwaves.com. Sorry, that's spelt or pronounced. It's pretty much spelt GNOSTICWAVES.com. So check it out if you are on the internet and are able to. And my name is Diane Razam, in case you've just joined in for the first time, generally the host of this program. And today I'm going to be continuing on a topic that was started last week. And that topic was mysticism, music, and movement. Now, the full version of that talk was aired on the internet show Karate Radio, and the website, I believe, for that program is karateradio.net, so KORADIRADIO.net, and there's lots of interesting talks on that program, Gnostic-related ones, from a variety of different speakers, from a variety of different organisations. So that's really quite a marvellous program. And last week was the first half of that show. And then this week I wanted to continue on with the rest of it because it's quite an important topic, well, at least for me in my understanding of mysticism and the spiritual path. Now, so to begin with, I wanted to recap on last week's program, which was mainly the importance of music. And, you know, given this is a radio station which primarily plays music, it's quite appropriate to talk about. Now, whether we're aware of it or not, listening to music helps to lift or to shift our emotions. So if we're feeling not so good, we listen to some music and it makes us feel better, or at least it makes us feel different. Now, there's some music that can be quite depressing, and so perhaps we have an affinity to particular types of music because they match our emotional state at that time. But either way, it makes us feel good. Now, this connection between music and our emotions is something that's very strong, and whether we're aware of it or not, it's definitely used in a lot of different movies and a lot of different television shows where music is used to help us to know how to feel. And there's a great example of this in The Truman Show, which is a movie with Jim Carrey. And there is a part when the main character is meeting his father again after, well, he thought his father had died, and his father came back to the show. And the scene that leads up to them meeting and embracing is all choreographed, and there's like smoke there or mist, and then the music is put in the appropriate time to stimulate the appropriate emotion. So it's very interesting how music is used to help connect, to help educate our emotional center. So I also talked about the usefulness of using mantras. So in the work that we do, the meditation practices, we know there's lots of different types of meditation. The most common understood meditation, you could say, is for relaxation. And most people, well, a lot of people think that that is the ultimate goal of meditation, is to relax. But we know in these Gnostic teachings that meditation goes so much further than that. We use it as a tool to really experience gnosis or knowledge, to experience what is beyond our perception, what's beyond our awareness, our consciousness at this particular level it is. And meditation helps us to not identify with the circumstances in life, to not identify with the problems, to those things that the ego can cause in us. And also there's meditations to help us connect with the higher principles, higher aspects of ourself. And mantralization is there to help us in all these different facets, all these different aims of meditation practice. Now, the Master Samael says that it's more beneficial to vocalize the chakras for 1 hour a day than it is to read books for 1,000 hours, which is quite a strong statement. So the use of mantras, like, say, for example, the chakras, most people would be familiar with the chakras, which are etheric, astral, internal senses that we have. And there's 7 main chakras, and there's lots of minor chakras too. And the one that people may most be familiar with is the one in the heart chakra. And then the third eye is also a very commonly known chakra, because that's related to things like clairvoyance and to be able to see with the third eye. So there's lots of different benefits to using mantras in our meditation practice. And one of the main, well, another main or useful reason is to help us to open the heart center. Now, the heart center is something that helps us in any stage where we're at, in all walks of life, to live more by virtue of the heart and not so much the head. Now, there's a defect or an ego that's strongly linked with the heart center, and that's pride. So when we have a closed heart, then it's generally a symptom of having a lot of pride, a lot of self-importance, we could also say. And so when we work to use mantras, especially the heart center mantra, then we help to open the heart center, and we help to overcome our self-importance, that real attachment to self. And a good indication of the self-importance is the level of fear that we have, because fear and pride are like best friends. So the more pride we have, the more fear we have, and so that's also a good indicator of how our heart center is operating. So that was a summary of last week, and I also began to talk about movement, and movement is a really huge topic, and I wanted to start with explaining the three brains again, because this is a really fantastic teaching that has been covered many times on the show, but it's always good to go back on these things. So the three brains: we have the intellectual brain, we have the motor center, and we have the emotional center. And so the intellectual one is something, you know, we all understand. We have the intellectual quotient, the IQ, that measures how smart we are. So the intellect is thinking, and our memory and everything to do with that, analysis, rationalization, and all those types of things. And cultivating the intellectual center, you could say, is about learning how to think, not just what to think. Like, we're told what to think all the time. We're being exposed to lots of different impressions that suggest how to think. And that's not what we want. We want to really know, what to think. We want to know how to think. And also cultivating the intellectual center is about overcoming intellectual laziness as well. So a lot of the times it's very easy to, we just want to switch off our brain. A lot of television helps us with that, because we can just switch off our brain and just watch something that entertains us, entertains our emotional center. So moving on to that center or that brain, and the music that we were talking about, what I was talking about before, definitely helps to educate, to cultivate our emotions and our emotional center. And so we have an emotional intelligence, so our capacity to be able to connect with people, to empathize, to socialize, to interact with people is something of the emotional brain. And then the third one, which is one we want to elaborate more in this topic tonight, is the motor center brain and the importance of cultivating the motor center. And we may not think of this as a brain, but it really is that the ability to do and to know how to do and to, yeah, have confidence in doing something. So a lot of us might want to do something like start a business. We want to take on a project and we may be able to plan it and think about it and have all these ideas. But when we go to implement that, we, you know, may not be able to do that because we don't know how to act. So we'll just go to a short music break and then we'll elaborate more on the motor center and cultivating it and lots of different aspects, especially in regards to mysticism. So I've chosen a track. It's from the CD, The Art of the Didgeridoo, and it's track 2, Concerto for Didgeridoo. And we're back on the Gnostic Waves show. That was a track called Concerto for Didgeridoo from the CD, The Art of the Didgeridoo. And I really like that mixture of orchestral didgeridooing. So I hope you enjoyed that too. Okay, so back into the topic of tonight, which is the mysticism, primarily mysticism and movement. But I wanted to talk about movement in a way, in a general way that to, so we all realize how important it is to do things, to act, but in a balanced way. So not, because we can have, there's two extremes. We can have like doing nothing and falling into laziness, becoming a couch potato. And then we can fall into overactivity where we're just always doing stuff all the time. And the Sogyal Rinpoche calls that an active laziness, which a lot of Westerners are prone to, just always keeping busy and never stopping to relax, never stopping to look within. And that's something that we also don't really want to fall into. But we can understand moving, we can understand it as going for a walk every day, exercising. I think that, you know, they used to advise walking for 30 minutes a day or 30 minutes three times a week. You know, so just getting that regular exercise and also that exposure to the outdoors. So there's also movement in doing things like housework, which is not so exciting. Or things like gardening, and gardening is, you know, quite a popular activity, gets people outdoors, you know, connected to the earth energies as well, which is something that is quite beneficial for our health and well-being. And just generally speaking, we've probably heard the saying that if we don't use something, we lose it. So if we're not using our muscles, we lose it. And we can actually say the same thing about those interior senses that I was mentioning before with the chakras. So if we have inner senses and we don't use them, then we're going to lose them as well. So it's a very general statement we're using here. So you often hear that diet and exercise is very helpful in the treatment of depression. And it's, you know, there's lots of things that people use to help them when they're feeling down, but definitely exercise or movement, getting out, is something that definitely anyone, whether they're feeling low on a particular day or if they've got long-term depression, getting out, forcing ourselves to move, nothing too strenuous that we would do depending on, you know, our condition, but definitely going out there and just trying to move our energies, to remove blockages in the best way that we can. And on this topic of blockages, I once read an article which I really stuck in my memory. It was in one of those inner self magazines that you can get free, and they have a lot of different new age articles and groups and all that type of thing. And this was an article on how we work on things like trauma, So we may have experienced something painful in the past. So let's say a past in our childhood, so we won't go back to past lives where traumas also originate. So we have these traumas and we work to release them emotionally. So there's that emotional pain or blockage that we work to release, and we can do that, you know, with a variety of different techniques, maybe through counselling or you know, hopefully in the work we do on ourselves, the self-observation and the comprehension. And then there's working on the negative thoughts that have arisen as a result. So the concepts that we have created as a result of that trauma. So something like fears, innate fears of things, and concepts like, oh, I can't do something, is a result of some type of trauma or fear that's lodged in the intellect or a concept that we have. But then interestingly, the article said that we also have to release that trauma or pain from our body. And that our body stores this tension, this pain. And I can't remember the specifics of what they advised, but I thought it was really interesting because at the time I was, in the Gnostic teachings, still am in the Gnostic teachings, and we learn about the three different brains that I mentioned before, the intellect, the emotion, and the motor center brain. And it's something that is really interesting. And a lot of people may be familiar with this idea that our body, our cells store information, store emotions. I mean, it's no secret, especially in the traditional Oriental medicine techniques, they teach that there are different organs or different meridians that run through particular organs, and that they store different negative emotions. So, for example, the lungs or the lung meridian is stores grief. The liver can store things like anger. So I think the liver and gallbladder meridian is associated with the feeling of anger. And then we have the kidney bladder meridian, and that is related to fear. So it's interesting, if we do certain stretches of these meridians, so they have different stretches related to the different pathways, and then we may, you know, do them for a few minutes, and then afterwards we may feel a bit of anxiety or another anger, impatience, intolerance just coming up. And it's actually because they are being somewhat released from through those stretches. And now we know that just doing stretches isn't going to get rid of them completely, and that in the Gnostic work, the Gnostic teachings, we want to really work to eliminate these false states, these negative emotions, this negative way of thinking, as permanently as possible, by really dissolving the falseness, the false reality that we're being presented with. But definitely the movement, the stretches, is helping us to a certain extent. It's helping us to release at least the tension that is being stored in the body. And, we have other examples of yoga, our physical yoga stretches, and that obviously does something, helps reduce this tension and can start to release these emotional blockages. Okay, so at this point I'll go to another music track from the same CD, The Art of the Didgeridoo, and this is a track called Earth Cry. So I'll leave you for a short while to reflect on this topic, and then we'll be back. Okay, back on the Gnostic Waves show. That was a track called Earth Cry from The Art of the Didgeridoo, and that track goes on for a while longer, so we'll just let it end there. And I was talking about stretching and yoga, or the physical stretching that we often find in the yoga classes, and how that can be really beneficial to help move stagnant energy, help to also release negative emotions. And also I wanted to mention there's a teaching that the ego that we have, or we have multiple egos, and that they can be stored in our cells, in our organs. And so by doing these exercises, we can shift it. And by shifting it, we can better observe it and help to therefore eliminate these problematic pains within us. So it's something that the Master Samael, the founder of the modern Gnostic movement, prescribes in his Tibetan exercises for rejuvenation. And these exercises have existed before he has prescribed them. And they are used to help us to keep healthy and also to keep young. It's told. We do these stretches, it helps us to stay young. And he also talks about using these movements or these stretches in combination with prayer. So asking the Divine Mother, asking the Holy Spirit to help us heal a particular part of the body. So if we have a physical ailment, we can work with these stretches to help that particular area. We can also work in any area of healing, emotional healing, mental healing, spiritual healing. And I would even say helping to heal someone else. So, you know, this idea of distant healing is something that's not new, and we can work to help another person. But mainly we would do it for our own healing needs. And it's interesting because now we're going into the more mystical, the more esoteric part of the talk, which is that the use of movement in prayer, in esotericism, in really working to connect with our higher being. And we know this is not something new either. In a lot of different tribes, in a lot of different cultures, they use dance. They use their body parts, you know, stamping the floor, clapping their hands, waving their arms around. You know, lots of different, more indigenous tribes. And I particularly chose these tracks with a didgeridoo because it's a good reminder of that tradition of indigenous Australian cultures that use that instrument, but also, you know, with their various different dances and tribal gatherings that are around. And so it's something that traditionally has been very common and perhaps not so these days. We do have examples, and I'll go through some of them. We have the Whirling Dervishes, which is from a mystical Sufi tradition. And so if you're not familiar with the origins, there was a great Persian Sufi poet and philosopher who was most commonly known as Rumi, but his more official name is Jalaluddin, and hope I've pronounced that right. And he's accredited with having founded the Order of Mevlevi, or the Dancing Dervishes. And the Dancing Dervishes, we may have seen them before. They're like people dressed in white with a white hat, long cylindrical hat, and they are spinning. So they spin and spin and spin. And these movements, these spinning, they signify the motion of the celestial bodies, and esoterically result in the establishment of a rhythm which stimulates the centres of spiritual consciousness within the dancer's body, which is something quite interesting. So, more specifically, when they practice, they have their arms wide open. One palm is facing up and the other palm is facing down, which is symbolic in itself. And then they swirl around and they're focusing on their intimate being, or their God, their higher self, whatever we want to call it. And then after a certain time, they fall to the ground, and this symbolizes being absorbed into the universe, becoming one with everything in the universe, which is something that is, you know, one of the aims of the meditation or the spiritual practice, is to feel that. Because when we feel that oneness, we're connected with everything, and then truth just naturally emerges. And And things like kindness and tolerance and patience are just natural things. They're not something forced upon ourselves or things that we think we have to do. So it happens very naturally. And then, so when they're absorbing, they're continuing to pray to God or to Allah to, you know, to help them to remain conscious, to become more permanently consciously aware, not just in that particular practice. And so this spinning action is something that's, you see kids naturally do when they're young, they're spinning around and around. And so it's something definitely that, you know, we may not do, and we may think, oh, you know, that sounds nice, but we may never do it. But there's definitely something in that movement, and even the mimicking of the, you know, the planets going around the sun, or the motion of the electron around the nucleus. So there's all this movement and motion that's happening around us. You know, we may think we're sitting down and being still, but all of our cells are ticking over. There's all this emotion that happens in at the cellular level. You know, even when we're asleep, our physical body, the instinctive center doesn't sleep, it just keeps going. And also our psychology keeps going. So the things that we dream about in the astral worlds are often just projections of our subconscious, so our egos. And so we're projecting these things into the astral world. And so if we remember our dreams, often we're just remembering these things of our subconscious, which are very useful in themselves. And they help provide us with a portal to be able to connect with higher masters in the internal worlds. If we you know, working esoterically to actually learn about these things, then the dream world is a great place. But my point is that nothing is ever still. Things are always moving and happening. We're just not always aware of it because our consciousness is mainly asleep. And so the Master Samael says, back to these dervishes, is he says that the sacred dances are as ancient as the world and have their origin in the dawn of life on earth. The Sufi dances and the dances of the dervishes are tremendously marvellous, representing with full exactness all the movements of the seven planets of our solar system around the sun, constituting in depth a fire cult. So, and then he goes on about that. There's lots of things we could say about dance and movement, but both of them, in essence, they symbolise the ever-changing nature of the universe, so the twisting, turning, being in harmony with the natural flow of movement and momentum. And then dancing can teach us how to harmonize the motor center and to act in a balanced way. So when I, you know, you may think, oh, I'm dancing, like, you know, it's your local nightclub or pub, is sure, that's an act of dancing, but anything where we can move in a rhythmic manner and is going to help us to connect with that flow. And there's quite a few things I want to mention on this matter. Just a bit about Rudolf Steiner's eurythmy exercises, and Rudolf Steiner was around the last century, and he created these exercises in conjunction with another lady. And these practices, he says that these practices take the physical body and the soul and the spirit, and make, you know, allows us to work all together with those three. And so what it is like a ensouled and spiritualized form of gymnastics. And the child that does it feels this, and he feels that each movement that the child makes doesn't arise just in response to a physical need, but that it's permeated with soul and spirit. And it streams through the body, and so the child absorbs these movements and, you know, his spirit into the very depths of his being. And that's pretty powerful exercise for a child to do. And it also, this improves balance, coordination, concentration, rhythm, and awareness of patterns. And it also helps to form bonds and cooperation, because when these children are doing this in their groups, so this is taught in Steiner schools, Waldorf Steiner schools, then it helps the child to be able to cooperate and keep in rhythm with all the other children. And this helps to form bonds and helps to for children to learn how to work together, which is something that isn't the easiest thing to teach. And we were talking about before, cultivating the emotional and the motor center. It's not, these things aren't so easy to teach. The intellect's more commonly, you know, used. It's easier to teach the intellectual center, but not so easy to teach how to develop emotional intelligence, or how to learn to have rhythm or move to flow with other people. And not just in a dance setting, we're talking about in life, because life is like motion and movement and interacting with different people in the social scenarios is something that's, you know, quite, can be difficult to teach and difficult for children to develop those social skills. And a lot of traumas can be formed at the school age level. And so it's something that can help. Can help them, I suppose you could say. So what else? I don't have much time before the practice, but I wanted to mention this really fascinating documentary, because I was talking about Eurythmia and how the movement of the arms, like even the opening up of the arms, is like helping helping us to be more open. When you watch those talks or documentaries where they talk about a person's body language and, you know, a person that is confident has a more open expression, while someone that's not so confident may, you know, shrug their shoulders, have like a bit of a hunch, perhaps, you know, cross their arms over their chest, like, you know, in a closed or defensive position, whilst someone that's, you know, not more confident is more open, so even physically with their arms. And so there's lots of there's lots of ways we communicate through body language, and so movement helps us to overcome these psychological barriers that we may have. And I watched an interesting documentary many, many years ago, and I can't remember what it was called. I remember a certain part of it. It was a documentary showing a certain rehabilitation technique for people that were addicted to ice, and they were actually in prison. So they had obviously done some crimes and have still had their ice addiction, and ice is like a form of methamphetamine, and it's quite highly addictive and, you know, can promote very violent behavior as well. And so what they were doing with these prisoners who were in rehabilitation is they were getting them to do the I'm a Little Teapot song. And so most of us would be familiar with that song, where a person mimics a teapot. So they put one arm as the handle and they have the other spout, and then, you know, at the appropriate time after the tea's brewed or whatever, the tea is being poured, and so you like tilt and pour the tea. And so in this, they had filmed these men doing this song and doing the actions. And as I said, I don't remember the specifics, but I remember that it was quite a successful technique to help them in their rehabilitation, because it caused them to. They were doing something they wouldn't normally do, so really they were overcoming that pride. So normally pride and our own self-importance wouldn't really want or like us to be doing that type of thing, unless we had a child and we'd do it to our child, but not to anyone else. And so it helped them to overcome their own self-importance and also to change and break their own patterns. So by doing and acting in these different ways, they were breaking their patterns and breaking their addictions, or helping, taking a step towards that. And I thought that was a really clever technique, and hopefully they're still doing that. But it's something that we can apply to anyone. We form our patterns in life. We form our intellectual or our set ways of thinking. We have our recurrent ways of feeling, and then we have our recurrent habits that we do, like we get up and maybe we have a certain series of events that happen and we do the same thing every day. And so we form habits and then we become set in those ways, and then it becomes difficult to break and to change our habits and our ways of thinking and feeling. But by doing things differently, we can help to shift those patterns within us. And, you know, you hear people say, oh, you know, try brushing your teeth with the other hand. Like you might use your right hand normally and try brushing it with the left. And that can help. And so, yeah, I just wanted to mention that. So I was going to go to another music break, but I may just skip that given the time restraints. I've got about 10 minutes of the show left. And I just wanted, before we go into the practice, just wanted to summarize tonight's program, because we covered a lot of things. I really just wanted to summarize that, you know, motion and movement promotes good health, it promotes healing, it promotes a release of tension and blockages within us, and can be used and is often used in mystical devotion, tribal dances, sun dances, Sufi traditions, other traditions. So motion, movement, it helps us to flow with the rhythm of life and creation, because everything exists in motion. When we think we are still, we're actually not very still. So also it helps us to let go or to move on. So in life, sometimes we can get stuck. We can get stuck in a rut. We can get stuck in a depression. And the only thing that we can do is to keep moving, to keep doing. We may not feel like it. We may not want to. I know what that feels like, to not want to do anything for extended periods of time. But really, at the end of the day, we just have to keep moving, even though we may not feel like it. And I remember this sign I saw, and it stuck with me, something very simple. It says, get up, get dressed and show up. And I really like that, because some days it's really like that. It's just getting up is a hurdle. Getting dressed is a hurdle, and showing up is like takes super efforts. But once you manage to do all those three, the rest of it just seems to happen. So we'll just get the meditation music ready. So whilst I do that, I'll just go to another track from the Didgeridoo CD. So back in a very short while. Like to have played more of that track anyways. We're going to do a very quick meditation with the time we have left on the show. So getting ourselves in a position, in a place where we can unplug, where we can withdraw and go within. Possible. Turning off anything else that may be distracting us, the phone, television, try and close the door. And then focusing on consciously breathing in. Holding the breath for a short while. consciously breathing out. Breathing in again. If our mind is wandering around, bringing it back to the breath. So when we're breathing in, imagining that breath, that oxygen is like a powerful surge of energy within us. And nothing stands in its way. Any blockages, any tensions, any emotional pains do not withstand the force of the breath. We can imagine it like a gust of wind. And the same when we breathe out. It's like our breath has picked up these impurities, these blockages, and with the out breath we blow them away with all the carbon dioxide wastes of the cell. Like we're pressing the refresh button. See, although we don't need to be conscious of the process of breathing, it happens whether we're aware of it or not. We can take control of it. We can control the amount of oxygen we ingest. We can control how long we keep it in for. So that stage being pranayama. And then we can control the manner in which we expel the oxygen, the tension, the air. Oxygen, the prana in the oxygen, to soothe, to relax, to heal. If we're getting distracted by the mind, we tell ourselves there's nothing we need to do for the remainder of this practice but to breathe, to relax. We give ourselves that permission. Because let's face it, probably not going to get it from anywhere else. Okay, that was just a very short practice. Hopefully it was helpful in some way. And that concludes tonight's show. Thank you for tuning in or listening to the show recording. It's always good to know there's people out there listening. And I forgot to mention that if you wanted to call in to ask a question or leave a comment, if you've got any stories, you can always ring in the music break. Or you can ring after the show now that we don't have any more music breaks. And we'll be back next week, same time, Tuesday, 6:30 p.m. And I'm not sure what the topic is, but it'll be something of a mystical, philosophical or psychological nature. And hope to see you then. So good evening.
PBAFM 89.7.